What's going on, everybody, and welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. We are ready for the unveiling of a couple of team mocks. We got a round one. This is part one, where Frenchie's going to detail the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Giants, and the New York Jets. But for this pod, Frenchie, we are actually graced by the presence of the true CEO. Tom is on this pod with us. How's everybody doing tonight, boys?
Gentlemen, it's truly a pleasure and an honor to be on the pod with you two, taking over for the last couple of days. Am I still allowed to talk, Sean, since you're the boss, or no?
I'll allow it.
Thank you. I don't expect to be doing too much talking, just a couple questions here and there. I'm just going to let the savant go to work. Not an idiot savant, just a pure savant go to work with the draft.
Oh, that's so kind of you, and not the usual kind of savant I've been called.
Just a pure one. No idiot in front of it today. But yeah, we also have to mention that the probably biggest football fan, at least the biggest fan of his own team, possibly that I know, Will Smith, is not on here for the Cowboys mock draft. I guess it's the beginning of softball season, and the good doctor has to go in there and give him a couple innings at second base.
The good doctor.
So,
well, I think it's nice that we are going to be joined tonight by another William, Will Kane tonight. Isn't that great?
Will Kane, what's going on, man? Let's hear some takes. The real Cowboys fan.
Have not thought of that name in so long.
I don't know. What is he doing now?
I don't. Who cares? but you know, few people have ever made the shift from CNN to ESPN, and if anyone's going to fail at it, I'm glad it was him.
Absolutely.
Agreed there. He is one of the fallen ones. We've got some guys going from sports to other things, like Strahan and the wide receiver from, what was that show? Good Morning
Football. Nate Burleson?
Yeah, he's good. That guy Marty Smith went from NASCAR to now he's like the most important reporter at ESPN, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's wild, but at least he had the Southern roots.
Mm-hmm.
He went from NASCAR to college football, and that is Alabama through and through.
Yeah, that's what Sean fucking dreams of. He wishes he could do that.
I'm good. I'm very good on the NASCAR part. I want no part of that.
I'd love to go to one once, because I want to know, like, why do you care?
Yeah, I need to feel it. I'm right there with you. Same thing with F1 for me.
Yeah, F1, they're at least doing crazy turns, and if you do it in a Middle Eastern country, they might make the track look like Mario Kart.
So, true.
There's some bonuses there, but
it also feels like kind of an elitist sport. I mean, I'm a big golf guy, so I can't say much, but
no,
it feels like
no,
if you go
right.
to F1, it's like it's a very Instagrammable sport.
Yeah, Formula One is for like fide eyebrows and hipsters who want to be rednecks.
Mm.
Hipsters who want to be rednecks.
Yeah, like they're that. A weird mix. You can only find them on the outskirts of Portland where they've been banished.
They were in Brooklyn for a while, but they got rid of most of them. Now it's just straight hipsters.
Queens.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, do you guys want to talk draft, or you want to just talk obscure sports that we don't understand?
I've been really into High Lie lately.
Yeah, where you've been catching that one. I mean, the only time I can ever remember High Lie was from Jackass, where I think they were hitting Steve-O with oranges, or Johnny Knoxville, one or the other. I don't know if you boys remember that.
That is a memory I didn't have until you reminded me of it, and I couldn't be happier that
yeah.
you did.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, that's what I'm here for. This is why I'm on the podcast.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Yes, you're making your presence felt, brother.
This is worth all the work I do.
Yeah, I'm just going to come in for a couple of minutes and just fire up a couple threes, and if they fall, they fall. If they don't, I'll just walk towards the bench.
Well, yeah, you got the Deuce McBride swagger going tonight. So
I was going to say George Costanza. Just leave on top.
I'm going to try, boys. I'm always trying to. I really am. All right, who Sean? Should we let him pick the first team we're going through here?
Yeah, I think it's dealer's choice, Frenchie. Where do you want to start here? We're doing Giants, Jets, and Cowboys. Choose whatever order you want.
I'm going to start with the Cowboys, and we're going to work our way up to teams that people on this call care about. Amazing that
Will sent us a couple questions, by the way, and his first question was, what will the Cowboys do with the 24th pick, even though he knew we were doing a mock draft?
It wasn't the best start for him, so.
So that's his question number one. What are the Cowboys going to do?
Thank God he's not here. This is why I appreciate Cowboy fans when they're diehard. That's how I hope they go. So at 24, great question, Will. I've got them selecting Graham Barton out of Duke. And bear with me on a little bit of this, because I spent some time going through the ways that the Cowboys draft. They've had a group at the core long enough to where you can do a bit of this. And the Cowboys look for more long-term potential than immediate results. Look at Fehoko, look at Mazi Smith, Tyler Smith, Sam Williams. They're not afraid of having players change their positions. Tyler Smith, where he started. Asim Richardson, he played left tackle for 3 years. Now he starts at guard, or he's currently starting at guard. Micah Parsons, sort of. Israel Mukuamu went from cornerback to safety. And in a lot of cases, like Tyler Smith, Micah Parsons, we could even go Taco Charlton. They'll take athletes over guys who have pristine technique. So Graham Barton is someone who, when he moves to the interior of the offensive line, is going to take one of the slots, left guard or center. He does have experience at center, but it's a couple years ago. And right now the Cowboys line has holes on both. So with all that being said, I think Barton is someone who, moving to the inside of the line, is going to have that sort of flexibility. And I know that, Tom, you're a longtime listener of this podcast, so you're already caught up from our day two of positional work. But part of what makes Barton such a good prospect for these is the way that he is able to move. He's really quick off the snap, especially if you go back to his center tape freshman year. You can see that that movement's very natural for him. It's where I think he'd be best. And he is really consistent. You're going to see the same player game after game, snap after snap. And for the Cowboys, that's not something they get all the time.
I like that
pick. Really like this pick here, because obviously the offensive line, it's a glaring hole with Biadic gone, and obviously Smith gone. And those guys were kind of easing their way out anyway, right? I mean, the offensive line that dominated for so long is not really in place anymore, but they still have a quarterback who may or may not get his next massive deal from the Cowboys. They're dealing with that right now. But whomever is behind center, they need true protection. And I think, obviously, if you want to keep CeeDee Lamb happy, you're going to have to make sure that Dak Prescott is in the most fortuitous situation to be what everybody expects him to be, which is a top quarterback in this league. So is there any way they don't draft an offensive lineman for you at 24? I guess I'll rephrase Will's question. Or is it offensive line all the way?
I mean, you know, never say never. Remember that morning when all of a sudden Baker Mayfield was going first? I think that receiver could honestly be another spot, because they're going to, you know, his CD's getting paid. They're going to have to re-up Dak or get someone else at quarterback. So, you know, they're going to have slim pickings for a lot of these spots. Even this offseason, they weren't able to spend a lot of money. And now they've still got to figure out some of the fallout from there.
I wish Will was here for that comment. So he could talk about
all
Arkansas
the money is
basketball.
going to the Arkansas basketball program.
I was gonna say, you got to get Calipari. This is all of it. And actually, there's a center named Bo Limmer who played at Arkansas, who I think, if they do hold off on offensive line, would actually be a really good fit. So Jerry might get to spend more money on Arkansas through all of this. But I think Barton just fits their needs so perfectly. It might not be him who's available. There's some rumors that the Steelers are also looking at Barton at 20, and the Cowboys don't move around too often. So they might look at someone like Jackson Powers Johnson, who's pretty refined and is more of a natural center in the sense that that's what he's been playing. He's also really stoutly built, broadly built, and has that kind of, you know, barrel chest mauler as a center. Where Barton's going to be moving in from left tackle, so his advantages are going to be more speed-related. And I really appreciate the way that he's able to mirror, even if he's not quick enough on the kick step to be able to get out against the fastest of speed rushers.
So it's
what are your thoughts on all of that, Tom?
It's looking like Frenchie thinks that the Cowboys need an offensive line player, and I completely agree. I just think if Dak wants to get paid, if you want Dak there, you got to protect him. And either way, you need to protect Dak in order to win this season. And like you said, they didn't do shit in free agency, so they're going to have to build up that O-line that they lost somewhere, echoing what you said earlier, Sean. So I like the pick.
Yeah. All right, cool. Then I'll just move it on to day two, because they've got other holes, like running back, where I think they'll have the first one off the board with Jonathan Brooks from Texas. There's been a lot of connection between the two throughout the process. And, you know, there's also the Texas connection, and Jerry loves his Texas guys. If you're happy with the way his ACL is healing, I think that it's a bit of a toss-up. I have very similar grades on Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson. I like Benson better, but he's more of a home run hitter and more of a rotation guy, it seems, based on the way that he's used at Florida State. With Brooks, on the other hand, you have someone who waited their turn to be the bell cow behind some really good running backs and were just used a little sporadically before this. Most of the season, he was one of the best in the country, and he's someone who will be able to stay on the field for all the roles that you need a running back to do. And right now they've got Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, and Royce Freeman. So they're going to need someone who takes more than a few snaps a game. And then at 87, I've got another skilled player in Jermaine Burton, the receiver from Alabama. And again, the receiving core is something else that still needs some improvement. Jalen Tolbert 2 years ago, we haven't seen such great results from him quite yet. And then Brandon Cooks, again, he's getting a little bit older. I think they could use some more juice in that room. Burton's got real deep speed and is a very good route runner. Some concentration drops, not the strongest guy, and is a bad blocker in the run game. And because of that, Alabama had to keep him moving and keep him on the sidelines, even though his skill set is more natural at a slot position. So there will be some things to work out there, but that's why you're picking him at 87, because there's stuff to work on. That's where we're at. But he's someone who I think can offer some explosion, as well as the traditional kind of deep and outside routes, digs, post, curls, hitch, slant, that sort of thing, is where Jermaine Burton, I think, is really going to shine. And that's the sort of role they need, because you already have CeeDee Lamb to do all the yak work and get the majority of the looks. You just need guys to support him.
I really like the value there of Brooks in the second round.
Me too.
And, you know, if they come away in the first three rounds with your a plug and play offensive lineman on a offensive line that needs improvement, then you go running back with Brooks, who has a lot of big playability. Get some chunk yardage, and then in round three you get a wide receiver right there. Like I really, really like the fact that Dallas could come away with three players who are going to start and make impact from day one.
Yeah,
I don't like it as a Giants fan, but I think Will's probably smiling right now.
No, I'd be pretty miserable if this is how it played out.
Exactly, but, you
know, home run for them, and I'd take guys who I think are mostly being mocked in that range. I checked the big guys, Mel Kiper, Pro Football Focus, as well as using the NFL mock draft database, where they have both consensus mock drafts and consensus big boards, where they try and compile all of the mocks and all the big boards from everywhere. So you can see kind of generally how journalists and analysts are feeling about certain players. So it's not just that I think that these are really good guys. I mean, could have put Caleb Williams at 24 too, but guys who are being talked about in this area who I think would be good fits and, you know, solid value too.
Listen, you don't have to justify yourself to me. We know you're the most dialed guy around. People just, everybody's just trying to find us. And once they find us, they're going to find you, baby. No doubt about it. And I love that pick. The running back Brooks out of Texas as well. I think that's just a very Texas running back name. I don't know why. It's just a very easy ring to it. And
you put Brooks on the back of a Cowboys jersey and it's going to sell. Like, it just looks so crisp.
Exactly. And I think
what would
Will
be a good number for him, Frenchie?
I mean, I like 28.
Ooh, I was going to say 22. Do they have somebody retired?
Emmett Smith.
Emmett Smith's retired. Yeah, that makes sense. It would be nice if he
let him genuinely, my instinct was also 22.
Yeah, yeah. But then you have Emmett Smith. I love the pick, though, nonetheless, because, like you said, the Cowboys already have, like, Freeman, who's probably toast, and then a couple of scat backs. You need a guy that can run three downs. And the Cowboys really suffered from not having that last year when they tried to make Tony Pollard that, who had a great year, but you could see some signs of fatigue towards the end, and Deuce Vaughn is not going to spell that.
Yeah, and yeah, listen, I think that Deuce Vaughn, there's a nice role for him, and I thought it was pretty good value for them in the sixth round, but he's not built to be able to handle it, you know, all game long. I do actually think, since you brought up Deuce Vaughn, and by you, I mean me, that he's someone who, with the new kickoff rules, I think could be really, really good in that role. Now that I think more kicks will be coming back and we have another kind of phase to bring people into, Deuce Vaughn, I think, is built for that sort of, you know, construct that we're working in for kickoffs now.
Mm. I like that. I mean, we're getting every angle here, Sean.
Of course we are. What do you? Yeah, this, we're getting the best here. This is honestly ridiculous.
This is what we do. So day three, I'm just going to go through everybody that I got. At 174, I've got Gabe Hall. He's an interior defensive lineman from Baylor. He is not a complete player by any stretch, but he is a long player. He's a good pass rusher. He's a great athlete, and that's the sort of risk that the Cowboys like to take. He needs to develop real pass rush moves and get stronger, especially so he can hold up against the run. But, you know, potentially designated pass rusher rotation, but also has a large tool set that you can hone into real talent. At 216, I have Daquan Hardy, a slot back or slot cornerback out of Penn State. 5'9", but really good quickness and attacks like he's much bigger than he is. He steps in front of linemen when they're on a pull and is really exceptional as a blitzer from the slot for someone so small. Also, you know, we just mentioned special teams, but as he gets stronger, he could have a role there as well. At 233, this is a pick from Las Vegas. I've got them going with Ethan Driscoll, who's an offensive tackle from Marshall. He's 6'8" and 300 pounds, and he plays as angry as linemen should play. Real mauler in the run game, but right now his feet are slow. My quick note is that if he could, you know, take ballet for a year instead of be on a practice squad, he'd probably become a steal. But he's got really good hands, and if you can keep working with him on his feet, developing that technique, and, you know, this is – on teams to figure out the sort of coaching he was getting at a school like Marshall, you know, where there is a lot of success, but it's never NFL coaching. You're just trying to figure out how big the gap is. In a draft that's a little weak on day three, I think Driscoll's a lottery ticket worth buying. And at 244, this is going to be really late in the day, so I figured Jerry Jones would be pretty drunk, and he would type in Kenny Loggins. And he'd end up betting Kenny Logan, who's a safety from Kansas.
Nice.
I thought it'd be pretty good, too. Logan's good in zone coverage. He pursues well and is a really physical player. He will try and lay people out instead of making a safe hit and does miss because of it. But tested poorly, films better than the testing, and he's someone who's built as a core four special teamer day one.
We like.
I mean,
that.
I think if you get that value at that point in the draft, that's really what you're looking for at that point. Just somebody who can make somewhat of an impact on the field at really any time. You know, I think at that point, anybody that plays is good.
Yeah, that's always the goal. If you can get someone who's going to contribute on special teams, especially with, you know, I made the point a pot or two ago talking about the way that rosters have to be built because only 46 guys are dressing every Sunday, which I think is ridiculous, but you need guys who not only are they going to be able to fill in if you need them to, but are going to be able to contribute in a lot of ways.
Tom, what do you think Will's going to think when he hears this? Do you think he's going to come away very happy and disappointed if this plan doesn't come into place?
Yeah, I do. I think the first three are obviously the biggest three because you expect those guys to be possible, if not definite, starters. And I mean, that fills three major holes that they're going to have going into the season. And then outside of that, I love all the players that he mentioned. And the perfect one at the end. I mean, Jerry getting drunk, it sounds about right. Maybe he'll be on a bigger boat this year. Maybe he'll be on a fucking, like, Enterprise starship or something. I don't know. We're going to be doing Star Wars soon, so I figured I'd bring it up. I like all the picks, and if Will's disappointed, then that's too bad. He should have skipped his softball game today to argue back.
Beautiful. Well said. Frenchie, before we get off the Cowboys here, what are your takes on the whole Dak Prescott situation? Do you think ultimately they're going to pay him as one of the top paid quarterbacks in the league, or do you think that it's all dependent on the season? And is there a world that we live in where he could be off the Cowboys this time next year?
My guess is they pay him because Jerry pays lifelong Cowboys. This is just part of what he does, but he's also very willing to let the process play out. We've seen it before. How many times did he franchise tag Dak? And Dak's remembered that in negotiations, and he tries to get every dollar from Jerry, and at the end, Jerry usually bends. I think that this is going to play out. My guess is that in the offseason, Dak's agent's going to start reaching out to teams and see what numbers look like, and he's going to end up being back with the Cowboys, you know, right after the combine.
Yeah, that seems to be the direction they're going in. I don't think Jerry's in any rush to pay him right now.
No, but I mean, if he was going to pay him, and if he was as certain about it as I make it seem, you know, I think that it'd already be done, because then you'd be able to spread his $62 million cap hit this year across and into next season. Might give you a little extra wiggle room right now, so you could get someone other than Eric Kendricks, or in addition to Eric Kendricks. So it's just the way that I feel these processes, you know, we see it again and again with Jerry Jones. He doesn't like bringing in free agents. He'll pay for players that he trades for. And when people are lifelong Cowboys, they usually come out getting paid.
Yeah, I agree. Gotcha. I think unless the Cowboys have something biblical happen, whether it be having a 4 wins or less season or Jerry Jones dying, I think he gets paid. I mean, unless,
What part of the Bible do you think that Jerry Jones dying is from, if it's biblical?
Something out of the New Testament. I don't take Jerry Jones as much of an Old Testament kind of guy, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. I love the Old Testament. Big fan of it. I love the New Testament as well.
Yeah, it's one of my two favorite testaments.
One of the two. Definitely one of the two. He, although I think, hates the Old Testament. If it was up to him, I don't think the Old Testament would have ever been written. So I'm going to go with which one of the guys that wrote the New Testament? Who do you think?
Paul? These are letters of St. Paul, if anything.
Paul, yeah, that was who I was going to go with. Formerly of Saul. Formerly. And then he turned it around.
It's nice when people grow.
It's the ultimate comeback story. I mean, the guy was a legit mass murderer.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost the only thing better would be if he could rise from the dead.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot.
That's what Jerry's ultimately going to do, too. You know, when he dies, it's only temporary. He's rising.
Yeah, Steven's going to have a puppet of his father to make these picks on TV.
It does say a lot about society that you're not given the chance to murder a bunch of people and then redeem yourself. Maybe we should start, I don't know, maybe these mass murderers have a chance to become an apostle.
I don't think that we can talk about the prison system right now. Sean's in Texas. They'll hear about it.
That's true. We'll leave it
very,
be.
Very true. They won't take too kindly to it down here. where do you want to go from this, French?
We'll go to the Jets, since the Giants have the highest picks. I don't want to give too much away. So at 10 for the Jets right now, again, this is one where a little logic. Following the rumors with the two, but they also went through, they signed John Simpson, Tyron Smith, and Morgan Moses. And I see from the people that they're bringing in for top 30 visits, what they're saying. I think that this pick's going to go more in lines with skill positions than it with than on the offensive line, which still needs depth, but the skill positions need starters right now. And in the mock, the top three receivers are gone. So at 10 here, I've got them going with Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. And if it's what Aaron Rodgers wants, I think we've learned a little bit about what Aaron Rodgers gets, but he's also a phenomenal player and is at least a top 10 player. He's going to help Garrett Wilson stay clean because Bowers can do get catches in the dirty spots. He's really versatile. We've seen the way that even in Green Bay, the way that Hackett was using the tight ends is the first time that Aaron Rodgers was really using his tight ends. And the sort of offense that they run, the Shanahan style, as it's always called, is one that is heavily involving the tight ends. And the Jets right now, they don't really have tight ends that can move. So getting someone like that who's going to be able to get extra yards with every catch and who's going to step in day one as a, you know, spectacular threat for your team. While the positional value, I think, can be questioned, I think that it'd be a major upgrade for the Jets. Even if they bring in people like Mike Williams, I think it's the biggest signing, but he's struggled with that turf before. I think Bowers is someone who's going to not just fit the needs that they have, but also the culture.
Bless you.
They want to build. There it is.
Bless you. Bless you.
Tom, what are your thoughts on that? Do you want the offensive line?
Yeah,
or are you happy with getting a playmaker like Bowers?
I hate a first round tight end almost as much as I hate a first round running back. But if Frenchie thinks he's going to be that good, I'm going to go with his gut on that one and take it. But personally, I would prefer offensive line. I understand the whatever Rodgers is saying and whatnot, and he would be a great player. But for me, Rodgers can say what he wants, but if he can't stay on the field, I do kind of worry about that. Not to mention, I'm a big fan of taking lesser wide receivers and seeing what Rodgers can make of them as well, and tight ends as well on top of that. So for me, I'd prefer offensive line, but if you take Bowers and Frenchie says all these beautiful things about him, I'm going to talk myself into it.
Yeah, and again, while he's a tight end in nature, he's going to spend a lot of time all over the field. You know, my comp with him was Aaron Hernandez, but
not a murderer?
Character, anything? Yeah, not a murderer, I think.
I don't think we have to. Yeah, well, we don't know anything about anybody else, but.
No, I don't know anything about any murderers.
Me either. No snitching here, but.
He's a 8 to 10 touch a game guy, which is the sort of production you would get from a top receiver at this slot too. And while I, you know, agree from a spot where we've seen so many guys who have struggled on this offensive line in the past, I think much like Giants fans, there's a great movement where we want to bring these guys in, but the Joe Douglas has already brought in 3 new starters on top of it. So, for me, I think it's less likely that he's leaning towards picking an offensive lineman. Otherwise, I think he might have been able to divert some of the assets to, getting another receiver or other targets there, knowing that we have a top 10 pick to spend on an offensive lineman in a really strong offensive line class.
Go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say, let's pour one out for the Zach Wilson era. It's officially over.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what the Jets are going to select with that pick, Frenchie. So I expect you to guess it.
Perfect. Well, on day 2, the Jets only have the 1 pick from the Aaron Rodgers trade.
I'm okay with that still.
Yeah. I agree, as you should be. But at 72, this is where I have them taking the offensive lineman. I have them going with left tackle Patrick Paul out of Houston. And he's a left tackle with true left tackle traits. He's 6'7", 315 pounds, and he's got more than enough strength to move people in the run game. He's got some pretty decent movement abilities. I think at this spot, he's going to be the swing tackle. Him and, you know, Max Mitchell or you know, Carter Warren, these are the guys who I think are going to be competing for that swing. And again, you know, this is a hopefully a backup role, but when you have Tyron Smith, we think it's going to be a little bit more than that. We've seen that the Jets have preferred to bring in the kind of triple XL size lineman, but at 315 pounds, it's a lot easier to carry than the 350 type pounds that we've seen from other offensive linemen. They like to go with traits. Whether or not they should is up for debate, but he's someone who has a lot of traits. He made a lot of improvement this previous offseason, which gives me hope that he's still able to take it another step. His balance, especially in pass protection, was much improved. He was on the ground a lot less this past season, which shows sort of the functional athleticism, which I think the folks who've been listening throughout this whole series have heard me say a few times. That sort of athleticism that keeps him on his feet, that balance helps in the run game, but it also comes out in the pass game as well. The quickness towards the edge, I think, is still being worked on, but he's someone who up until last year was really surviving on his athleticism. And this past offseason, it really looked like he took a big leap in the fundamentals of the position. And with the athleticism he has, I think there's another leap or two to be made. So I think he's someone where you're going to have him in that swing role. He'll be rostered, but he's also going to take the time developing. And another thing with this kind of technique side of it is that this is stuff you can improve on in the off season and during the season off the field. There's some things where you're going to have to get a lot of touches and a lot of snaps to be able to improve. What Paul's able to improve on, the flaws that he has, are things that he can continue building throughout the season. So he's going to be someone who, hopefully, as long as his head's right through all of this, which we have no reason to doubt, are going to be able to keep getting better if he can keep progressing the way that he has been.
I mean, there you go. You're addressing the offensive line, right? I mean, that's a huge thing, whether you're doing it at 10 or doing it at 72. I like the fact that the Jets are at least addressing that position and not leaning on the hope that Tyron Smith and Moses and Simpson are going to be playing 17 games this year. And that might be a really good value pick. I do trust Joe Douglas when it comes to offensive linemen.
Yeah, and I think that you know, we have this great instinct where the first round pick is the focus, and it should be. Like, this is the most valuable part, but the draft goes on. And rosters are, you know, made of guys who third, fourth, fifth round. This is what I keep saying. You can lose your job by going wrong in the first, but you keep your job by going right through the rest of the draft. And these are the sorts of guys that I think that we, you know, need to keep building up throughout the process here.
Yeah, you're going to hear no complaints out of me. If every pick from here to the end is offensive line, I'm a happy man.
Oh, man. I think we have a problem there. You're not going to be a happy man.
Uh-oh. Well, let's hear the players anyways. I can still get excited for some other positions.
Fair enough. I'm just glad that you are open to it.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear about some greasy hips, though.
Greasy hips is, I mean, you got to wait for those.
Okay.
But you don't have to wait long. So at 111, I have a guy by the name of, Dadrian Taylor Demerson. He's a safety out of Texas Tech. And he's someone who was one of the, this has been a class in which the entire safety group in particular just didn't show up. Everyone went to go take a nap during this time, and for some reason the only people who stayed awake throughout this it was Dadrian Taylor Demerson. He was a superstar at the combine, but he also has a ton of movement skills, especially as he's going into the deep zone, and a lot of versatility. He had 100 snaps in the box, in the slot, and deep. he's best deep. He's seen a ton of football. He's going to be 24 years old by the time the season starts. And he's played a lot of games. That shows up in his film. You don't see him making a lot of bad plays. But again, he's still improving. And the area you see that most is in his tackling. He had over 800 snaps last year and this year. But from last year to this year, he cut his missed tackles in half from 18 to 9, playing the same number of games, just about the same snaps. So that's the kind of development that you want to see, you know, especially with older players. You want to see that they're keep making growth. At 134, I have Hunter Norzad, who's another 24-year-old. He's a center from Penn State. And he's going to be, you know, another one of those guys who is pretty well-rounded, is going to offer some depth behind Joe Tippmann. But Norzad, it's contagious.
Definitely is.
Norzad didn't allow any sacks last year, and he also has a little bit of versatility across the line. 2 years ago, he played at both tackles. Last year, it was left guard, and then this year, he played center. So that versatility is going to be really great. But he's someone who especially needs to improve his anchor. The movement's really good, and I think that his pass protection is much better than his running game. And with Norzad, I think that, again, strength is something that you can keep developing, but I think in this kind of fourth, fifth round fringe, getting someone who's at least pushing it as one of the backups, I think is going to be a pretty good value there. But that is the last offensive lineman that I have today. So sorry about that. At 185, I've got a little bit of a curveball, I think. And that's Jordan Travis, the quarterback out of Florida State. He's recovering from tearing his knee. And in this situation with Tyrod Taylor as a legitimate backup and Aaron Rodgers starting, he's not going to need to rush back. But as he's healing and as he's coming back, he can keep improving his footwork and working on his passing motion ground up, which I think is really where his development is needed. He throws at a single pace. The passes have good velocity, but they are flat, which can make it a little bit easier if we're just talking about that angle for the ball. The higher it is, the, you know, more you're dropping into the bucket. So deep balls, even though he has pretty good accuracy deep, can be a little flat, and that gives the corner a little bit more space where he can get a deflection. However, he's a great runner. He has another one improved throughout the process, and he's the sort of player you can trust. And the Jets did bring him in for a top 30 visit. If you don't know what those are, teams are allowed 30 players where they're able to invite guys, or 30 invitations really, to bring guys to your campus, train them, work them out, let them spend the day with the staff, all that sort of stuff. It's basically a one-on-one pro day at your facilities. They only get 30 guys, and the Jets took one of those slots and gave it to Jordan Travis. So I think there's got to be real interest in what he can bring as a potential and future and down-the-line player. And I think that it's a good way of balancing trying to have a plan for after Aaron Rodgers without making Aaron Rodgers feel threatened.
I love that idea. I really love that idea. You're finally bringing in a quarterback who's not going to have any stress on him whatsoever. People are going to forget he's even on the team. Let him rehab. Let him go through the motions of learning the NFL lifestyle, what it's like to watch a future Hall of Famer and a true pro at Tyrod Taylor. I think that's great. And we saw what Jordan Travis was at Florida State. He was really, really good. And his injury is what cost them a spot in the CFP. So I think that's really cool idea. Definitely outside the box. Was not expecting that. Tom, how would you feel if they went the Jordan Travis route there and they didn't bring in another player who might be a reserve guy or a special teams type guy there?
They do have three more picks after this, too.
They do, but at that slot, what is that? That's the 185?
Yeah, 185. So next is 203.
Yeah, so I think that's really good. What do you think, Tom?
I think he should just put it in an envelope and send it to Goodell at the podium. Just start making those picks.
Yeah, I don't know why we're wasting our time.
Yeah, I love everything about it. I mean, I like drafting from a position of strength, period.
Yep, and I think that's always the goal. And I really love the opportunities to use the draft to add more depth. which actually ties right in with 203. And this is a player who, for me, he's a classic what am I missing guy. And that's Dylan Johnson, the running back out of Washington. I'm always surprised seeing him in this area, but this is where he is, and I think he'd be a really good fit. Breece Hall, tons of speed, tons of lateral movement and ability as well. Dylan Johnson just runs with a ton of power. He's not very elusive, but he falls forward even though he's running into contact. Doesn't make anybody miss, hits them hard instead, and he's above average as a college pass protector. If he can be average as a NFL pass protector, which not sure if he is right now, but that's something to keep improving on as a, round six, round seven guy. I think that's huge value and a steal for someone who, as a power player, I think could bring a different element and contribute that way. And then the last two picks of the draft ended up with the Jets. So not that only do they have Mr. Irrelevant, but they also have Mr. Really Irrelevant, because nobody knows who goes the pick before. But as Mr. Really Irrelevant, I have DeAndre Prince, a cornerback out of Ole Miss, 23 years old, but playing in the SEC last year, only allowed 24 receptions on almost 450 snaps in coverage per Pro Football Focus. And the tape holds up with that. You do not see him on it often. He's really physical against the run. He's kind of a zone-only guy right now, just based on his mirroring ability, especially as we're talking about flat routes. He's pretty good as we're going in motion, backpedal, and then attack. Not as great when we're trying to stand in front of somebody side to side. But he's someone who's going to use that physicality and find a spot in the core four, and that's what you want. And at 256, I think that's nice. But at 257, I have what I think is the perfect pick, because as a UConn football player, it's rare to be celebrated, but being celebrated for being last, I think, is the perfect expression of UConn football.
It doesn't get much better.
And at 257, I've got the Jets going with Eric Watts, who's an edge player from UConn. He is really powerful. They kept him on the edge, but I think he might be better kind of in the 3-5 gaps. He's 6'5" with long arms, and he weighs 277. Right now, he's just powerful. I think on the edge, it's going to be a little tough for him to win on power alone. But with his long arms coming in at 6'5", putting him on the interior where he's going to outlength some of these guys, come off the snap with power, I think that's a spot where he'd be more impactful.
Where are you watching this UConn tape? Are you one of the 10 people going to the games, or how are you pulling this up?
So I didn't actually read either of those testaments, so I've spent a lot of time in hell.
Okay. Got it. Understood.
It is on 24/7.
Yeah, that sounds so about right.
That's so embarrassing.
How do we feel about that draft, Tom?
I love it. I really do. If we can get an RB in the later positions of the draft that can spell Hall a little bit, that'd be incredible. And then the UConn player to cap it off, I think the only thing that would make it better is if everybody felt so bad for UConn that the first undrafted free agent, they made the honorary 258th pick.
Oh, I love that idea.
That's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen, but hey. There was a UConn player I feel like came out of the draft a couple years ago.
They actually do put out some players every year.
It's not a small state. There should be a way where they could figure out how to get a better football program together. Maybe just drop down to the league that Sacred Heart is in. I don't understand. Just dominate that league.
Patriot Jim league Moore came is. Out. Yeah, Jim Mora, the head coach there, he came out, I think it was after last season, and he said something along the lines of, if you're not donating to our boosters programs, don't criticize us. You don't know what it takes to win in this league now. And I was like, that is, oh.
If you're not donating, then fuck you. That's what
he
should have said.
He came out and was like, fuck all these students.
Listen, I saw I would perceive well-off UConn fans at the Garden. Put some of that money towards the football program.
Yeah, come on.
25 years from now, we could be talking about a powerhouse.
I think ultimately it's never going to have that kind of like desire. Like I don't think anybody.
I mean, I think the only way it would, and the only way it would really open up UConn's eyes, is if Hurley left for a bigger school, and then they'd be like, "Holy shit, we need to figure this out." But he doesn't seem like he's leaving, so I guess just keep letting it ride. I did see a lovely video where the governor said that he pays for success, and it's like, motherfucker, that's a state job. You don't pay. You're a governor. You don't pay for shit.
I still love the Jim Calhoun press conference. Not a penny. Years ago. Not a penny. Not a penny. And the reporter asked him, like, "Oh, you make this,
give
some
of your
right?
money back or whatever."
And he goes, "Oh no, I make a lot more than that. I make a lot more than that."
Calhoun.
But Calhoun's the best. But Reggie, who's the running back that they drafted out of Pitt last year? I think in the mid rounds.
Israel.
Or Tom, do you remember who it was?
I think it's.
I know his name and I see his face, but I'm not going to go ahead and try and pronounce it. But he definitely had some impact.
Yeah,
snaps.
Israel Abanikanda.
Yeah,
Abanikanda. That's right. But you can continue to add to the running back depth. I think that's really smart to do in the mid rounds.
100%.
I think you get a good special teamer out of it.
No doubt. I would love that.
All these teams, they're wasting the time paying all this money for scouts. They could just listen to this. Done.
Or pay you some money.
I mean, listen, I will happily accept whatever people want to pay me.
Just use the Calhoun line. Not a penny.
Not a penny.
Well, that's what I told Frenchie when he asked for money to do this. Mm-hmm. That was my exact word.
You said literally not a penny.
Not a penny. I'll give you as much as Sean's getting paid. Not a penny.
that's true. That is how a CEO does business.
That's
exactly.
Right. He's got some under the table operation going. He's pocketing a lot.
Yeah, probably. Exactly. All right, we got one more team left. Frenchie, you're a Giants fan, right?
One more team left. Yeah, they're all right.
Who's your favorite college football team again? Because it's not UConn.
Kalen DeBoer's Alabama.
Wow.
Do you like that hire?
Yeah, I thought it was a good one. Yeah, so my father, he was career military, and when he was with his first wife and they had my brothers, when they lived in Germany, the first place that they were stationed at after they came back to the U.S. was Huntsville, Alabama. Which is how we ended up being an Alabama family, despite the fact that Huntsville is in Auburn territory.
I was going to say.
My dad is such a scumbag.
He picked the right side, though.
He would, ended up being great, but he would dress my sons up in Alabama gear, and he'd go out to the sports bars and watch games and stuff. And then anytime guys on base would start, like, talking shit, he'd be like, guys, my kids are here. And then whenever Alabama did something well and the kids would go crazy and all excited, people couldn't say shit because they're kids. And that is the true story of how my family became Alabama.
The
fans.
True amount of spite is really something that I value.
I love that. I think we've heard this story before because you know how I'm sports czar and I call a lot of people frauds. I think I passed that one. But Sean, it's much better than Sean's.
No, I'm the biggest fraud. There's Thank no you. Doubt about it. But we have Will. Will passes simply because his love for the Cowboys.
No, he doesn't pass.
A lot of love that he has for anybody else. Really.
He doesn't pass. He's still a fraud, but he's a diehard fraud. He
right.
lives and dies.
Oh yeah, no, you cannot question his level of commitment to his team.
Never.
I've told
the story of him crying on my mother's deck on my birthday. So, and that was just a regular season, like week 4 game against the Seahawks or week 3.
God, they love their team so much. That's what makes their tears so delicious.
Well, they didn't, if they didn't talk so much shit, they wouldn't have to cry over a loss.
They can't help themselves. It's my favorite part.
I know.
It is great. And then the Stephen A. tweets afterwards. Those get me.
I genuinely think Stephen A. has made millions off of the Cowboys. It's incredible.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Good. Listen, as long as if he can get Skip Bayless, just keep kicking him on the way down. That's perfect.
Amen to that. All right. Let's go into a Cowboys rival. That's the New York Giants. There's a lot of interesting ways they can go. They could trade up if they want to. They could trade down. They could stand pat at 6. at the end of the day, Frenchie, in my opinion, they're coming away with a quarterback that either falls or they're coming away with one of the top receivers in this draft. So where do you see pick number six being utilized?
I think that I'm with you. I think that they should have six players on that board, three quarterbacks and three wide receivers, and whichever one is left, that's the one they pick. At six, I have them going with Malik Nabers, the wide receiver out of LSU. Really explosive, great route runner, and can make big plays with the ball in his hands. Mike Kafka, quarterback in Philly, and then QB coach in Kansas City, and Brian Daboll with the Bills and with the Patriots. A lot of the times, they're wide receivers. The focus is more in all of those about explosive plays and route running, more than size, contested catch type situations. So because of that, I think that the coaching styles, and or less styles, but more the coaching histories, mean that Nabers could be a preference over Odunze. But I think that both of those guys are very much in play, and they're, you know, right there with each other too. And that's just a bit of why I think that they would prefer that sort of play style over what Odunze brings, though I think that either would be great. And there is an argument to be made that Odunze could be a better fit for what the Giants room needs right now, given that basically all their receivers are undersized or, you know, normally sized. But I think that the route running and explosion that Nabers offers and is going to weigh that out a little bit more than just trying to get someone because they're going to make catches that the room that you have right now hasn't. I think that if you ask me, and I think that he's, you know, slightly ahead because just of the preference of explosive plays and route running over the sort of contested catches, elastic, you know, frame and great catches in traffic and smoothness that someone like Odunze plays with. I think it's probably going to, it really comes down to those two, assuming that four quarterbacks go in the top five, which seems to be the agreement from everybody. So it'll be fascinating to see what they say. You know, it's a bit of a coin flip. I went with Nabers just based off of trying to analyze the receivers that Kafka and Daboll have had the most success with.
I mean, I'm thrilled with either or, truthfully. I think they both bring a skill set that is huge for what the Giants need. I mean, you look at Nabers, he'll burn the corner before he gets the ball and especially afterwards. But then, you know, the contested catchability of Odunze with just that smoothness is really appealing too. I think if they draft either of those guys, by the way, we're using the caveat that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not on the board. I've been seeing rumors of him potentially falling to six. If that's the case, that's the receiver you got to get. But if Nabers and Odunze, the Giants are coming away with a really special wide receiver one, which they've been lacking for years.
Yeah, I told my wife if Marvin Harrison Jr. falls to six, she's going to have to take me to the hospital because I'll have an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. if that happens, like, I would sprain both my ankles running to the stage. But, yeah, I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is probably going to be the one non-quarterback to go beforehand. And, you know, in most classes, Odunze and Nabers is, you know, the number one receiver. And in about any class, they're both worth top 10 picks. So either way they go, I think, is a win.
Yeah, I'm thrilled with it either way. And you obviously don't have a quarterback falling. Do you think there's a world where they trade up to go get one, or are they happy with staying at six?
The world I see is ugly, but
it's because the real world is ugly.
The world at the draft is beautiful. I think that all the rumors and indications and the bits that come out is that May is their quarterback. And if there was an opportunity to go get him, if the Patriots were willing to trade, that might be possible. But if not with the Patriots, then I find it pretty unlikely, given the aggression that a team like the Vikings or Broncos and Raiders and other groups might have to get up.
Well, the Broncos got Zach Wilson, so they're fine.
What picks are they using to trade up?
The only pick they don't have for the foreseeable future is this year's second. So
true.
They still have they've got plenty, especially in the future, to get rid of. And if it's a team like the Cardinals, I think you're stocking future assets, because this year you already have a second first round pick. So would you want, you know, an extra second round pick this year or extra picks next year? I think that's a discussion to, you know, that they definitely are having. I think with, it depends on where the trade comes from. I think that a team like the Patriots or the Chargers might find more value in going back and collecting more picks, whereas a team like the Cardinals that already has a extra first round pick this year, they might prefer something like future picks next year, or being able to still draft Odunze or Neighbors by only falling to six and still getting additional assets. So I think that it's possible. I think if it happens somewhere, it's probably with the Cardinals, just based on what their draft assets look like. I don't know if they're going to be as desperate as some of the other teams that Daniel Jones is what he is, but so is Aiden McConnell, or O'Connell. And I suppose that's my point. You know, Jared Stidham and Zach Wilson, that doesn't feel like a complete locker room for Denver either. So I think that these
teams... Yeah, they got Ben DiNucci too. Don't forget about him.
Oh, I can't believe I did. so with, I think that those rooms kind of call for a bit more desperation. So I find it less likely that the Giants would overbid, which is what anyone needs to do to go up and get a quarterback.
Yep. Yeah, I fundamentally agree with you there. I think they're keeping the sixth pick. And I also don't think they're going to be trading back either.
Yeah, and if they're trading back, to me, it's to someone like the Bears at nine, if the Bears really like a wide receiver. I don't think that they're falling out of striking distance with one of these guys, because they need elite guys at these positions where they've been lacking in so much. So you have the opportunity to take one of them. I don't think you, to me, you don't fuck around with it. Just walk up, make the pick, grab the star, move on.
With you. I think that's the way they're going to go.
Enough said there.
All right. Well, then moving on to day two. If the Giants' biggest hole isn't at wide receiver, I think one of the next biggest holes is your mother.
That's not right.
Wow.
Is cornerback. So at 47, I have them going with TJ Tampa out of Iowa State. He's someone who I think tested well. We saw with Banks that they care about some of these sorts of things and getting guys who might not be as technically refined but are really toolsy, but are also, and this is something that I think is true of Banks and Tampa, are great in run support and physical at the start of the routes. TJ Tampa is pretty good as a man coverage and also is pretty well versed in zone, which is good with the looks that Bowen's going to bring compared to Wilk. Wink Wilk block. TJ Tampa is also 6'2". He's got long arms. He doesn't have elite speed, and his tackling in space is a little bit iffier, but he comes up and he makes big plays and is willing to be physical and can be very physical. And those assets, I think, are going to, you know, lead him to a second-round pick. And for a team like the Giants, I think that he's someone who could be really successful and bring a lot of depth to a room that doesn't have much. And in the third round, I have someone that they brought in for a top 30 visit. And in the last two drafts, the Giants have been pretty consistent with taking guys that there's always a few in day two and three who they bring in for top 30s. Dane Belton and Wandale Robinson in particular. Take a sip, Mike. No thanks. But
you got all these names going on in your head. You've been doing lot of draft talk the last week, bro.
I'll give you a pass. So at seven, even at though I seven, never fuck yeah, names up.
Tom can't remember a name when we're talking about two guys, but you're rattling off like 200 names right now over the last couple days.
I'm trying to, but my mouth won't let me. At 70, I have them going with Mason Smith, the defensive lineman from LSU. They brought in Brian Burns. They drafted Kayvon Thibodeau. They re-signed Dex to that massive deal. And now they have a draft pick with a ton of potential, who's a big-time athlete who's going to be able to play on the cheap for a while in spots where you're not going to be able to continue investing big dollars and high picks. Smith is a legitimate athlete. He was one of the top players in his high school recruiting class, rotational player in 21, missed all of 2022 with a torn ACL. And in 2023, he didn't miss anything. He's got really heavy, violent hands, but they're not very accurate. He misses the mark with them. And one of the benefits that the Giants have is that their defensive line coach is Andre Patterson. And he's a defensive line guru. He's one of the best at that position group in the league. And he's someone who can make Mason Smith go from having traits to having talent. And that's the next level to go with, so that you can really unlock some of the potential he has. But he's already someone who comes in with great bursts off the line, heavy, heavy hands, and can anchor against the run. And that's something that I think in the three technique, the Giants, you know, really need, because right now that's a bit of a gap in the middle of their defense.
I'm all for rounding out this defense and making it one of the top run-stopping defenses in the league. Let guys also go after the quarterback. I know it's a very different scheme than what Wink was running with all the blitzing, but I think this Giants defense, the way that they're trying to shape it, obviously, through you see Shane's vision, I think that they're trying to basically say, we don't know what we're going to have at the quarterback position. We're obviously going to try to make the quarterback's life a little easier by drafting a wide receiver at the top of the draft, like you're saying. But I think they're saying we're going to win a lot of games by other teams not scoring a lot. And I'm okay with that philosophy right now, if I'm reading that right.
I mean, it's the philosophy you need with some of the players they have.
Right.
Yeah, there's no barn burners.
But I like that. I like that they're not trying too hard to look at something else. Like, they're actually, they have a plan in place, and they're going to utilize the players that they have for that plan. That's just being smart.
You would think, but here we are.
Yep.
All right, day three. Let's wrap this up. For day three, I've got them leading off with one of my favorite players, and anyone who listened to the running backs groups, they know that I love Audric Estime, running back out of Notre Dame. Top 30 visits. He came in on the very last day. They brought him in last minute. And I think that's a pretty good sign that they're legitimately interested in him as a player. He's a power runner, and I mean hardcore power runner, who's going to help balance the running back room with Devin Singletary, who's much more of a lateral movement sort of guy. And I think that's going to have a nice balance between the two. I don't think that you can go into next season with Singletary and Eric Gray. And Estime is someone who isn't going to be a lead back, but is someone who's going to be part of a rotation. And that's kind of what they need right now. At 166, this is a guy I've seen coming up a lot later than this. And in my opinion, he should go earlier. So this is a pretty nice middle ground. And that's Tanner Bordellini. He's a center from Wisconsin. He's a great athlete, top 10% in the 40, the 10-yard, the vertical, the broad, and the three-cone for centers. So his athletic ability is pretty unquestioned. He needs strength. It's the strength that is lacking right now, and his hands are sloppy. His movement, his mirror ability at the center position is great, but he's someone who's going to get the opportunity to sit behind someone like John Michael Schmitz, and isn't going to be the number one person they pull in for any issues that might come up with Schmitz. That's probably going to be Austin Schlottman. So Tanner Bordellini is going to be fighting for that eighth, ninth offensive lineman. If you're looking at the Giants and you have Andrew Thomas, John Michael Schmitz, John Runyon, Jermaine Illuminor, and Evan Neal in some, I think that's the most commonly, you know, approached version of the offensive line right now. And if not, it's because you have Aaron Stinney as a starting guard and Evan Neal on the bench. But of those six that I just went through, they're all going to be pretty high in minutes. I think Austin Schlottman's going to be backup center and guard. And then you're looking for who's going to be the eighth guy who dresses and the ninth guy on the roster. And I think Bordellini is going to be someone who is really valuable in that sort of role. If for no other reason than in an emergency, we have someone with great athletic traits who can move and who can mirror and pass coverage. And in the running game, using tight ends or having other people crash, there are ways that you can make it a little bit easier on him, even if it's just running away from him. And then at 183, I have Trey Taylor, who's a safety from the Air Force Academy. And everyone knows that I always have an extra appreciation for the folks coming from academies, because as opposed to most of the other people on this list, he hasn't had football as his job. He's the only one whose life hasn't been built by the coach and all the way through that he is a football player and that's all he is. When he gets to the NFL, that'll be when football truly is his job. But he's been a really good player throughout his time there. He's had 3 years where he's had over 100 snaps in the box, at slot, and as a deep safety. Three straight years coming into the draft. He's an average athlete. But again, I think there's more that you can unlock considering that his life hasn't been about prepping for the NFL. And no matter what happens with him in some other roles, though, I think that he's someone who, again, with that versatility, you're still going to be able to use in a few different ways if you need him to step in. But he's someone easily, once again, my favorite phrase of the day, core four special teamer while he's backing up. And also, he's pretty mistake adverse. He's someone who's, if he doesn't make the play, it's because he couldn't make the play. But he's usually either in or getting to the right position. It's just trying to see how far you can push his athletic traits to see how far he can grow if he becomes more than someone who's just an asset as a, you know, potential backup and special teams ace.
I love it. I'm all for it. Tom, what are your thoughts on the way Frenchie's mocking the Giants?
The Giants need a lot of players, and every single guy that he said sounds like a player. He hasn't said anything along the lines that leads me to believe they're going to get cut early on outside of, like, you know, the later rounds. I really like all the moves. I mean, the Giants need so much. I like them going, let's not get cute here. Let's not try and build draft capital. If it's the truth about what everybody's saying about these wide receivers, that if Marvin Harrison wasn't alive, then, you know, they would all be going number one overall. You go out and get that skill guy, and then you work from there.
Yeah, and Frenchie, I think the most glaring thing on your mock that people are going to want to know the answer to, you don't have them taking a quarterback either in round one or anywhere else in the draft. Is that just the way that your board fell? Was there a struggle for you to not take a quarterback that had maybe a comparable value to some of these other players that you have being selected? Like, or are the Giants really going to say, listen, we're already paying Jones this year, we trust that he'll be healthy, and we have Drew Lock, who maybe they're a little bit higher on than most because we know, you know, Dable with quarterbacks is a little bit better than some others.
Yeah, so for me, it's a bit of how the board just kind of looks right now. I don't think one of the top three quarterbacks is going to make it to six, and I don't think that any of the top six quarterbacks will make it to 47. After that, it's a couple pieces. Number one, it's that they have a real backup in Drew Lock, who also I think has some upside. He's played well for the Seahawks when he's been brought in. And he also has a pretty strong arm and is built mentally a little bit more like Dayball wants his quarterbacks to be, very willing to push the ball. Again, we don't know the veracity of the rumors about Drew Lock seeing this as a Baker Mayfield situation from last year, but it wouldn't shock me if that's at least how he saw it. And Daniel Jones is getting paid. They seem to be standing behind him. If you're not getting one of the top three guys, I'm not sold that someone else is going to be better right now, though I think that, you know, the arguments will be had for the next three guys. It's just that my issue is taking them as high as six when you need so much on this team. And that's really what it came down to for my day three picks. Even though I thought about someone like Spencer Rattler at 70 or Michael Pratt at 107. And those are guys where, while I think those would be fair value picks, this is a team that would use them as the number three quarterback. And are they more valuable as a number three quarterback than the other guys that we're taking on this list? The Giants only have six picks. They don't have the luxury that the Jets have where they can manipulate some of these things. I think at least through 107, all of those guys are going to step into big roles with the Giants, the smallest role likely being Estime, who would project for me as the number two running back with the Giants. Now, after that, I think that Bortolini at 166 and Taylor at 183 would have more impact than whichever quarterback they got there. And that late in the draft, I'm not sure if there'd be someone better than Tommy DeVito as a number three quarterback. They'll probably bring in somebody, but I would expect them at this point, if the draft falls similarly to this, once they get to the later part of day three, I would expect it to be more likely they bring in another UF unrestricted free agent draft pick, or not draft pick, but
yeah, you know,
they'll take one of the leftover players instead of using a pick that they could use on someone like a Trey Taylor, who's going to have a day one impact on special teams and offer depth at a position where they just don't have pieces right now.
Makes total sense to me. Tom, you got any other questions for Frenchie before we move on to his round one mock in a little bit?
No, not at all. I think we need to do a podcast where we talk about some of the past ones, which I know we're going to do this year, but I'd also like to do a podcast where it's like, where would you put Caleb Williams in draft and this draft or whatever. So I think we'd have to do a QB redraft someday.
I think that'd be a blast. Whenever you want, you guys know my number, and you know, don't give it to the rest of these people.
I won't. I'll try not to. Frenchie, as always, thank you. I know Sean, I listened to the podcast, had to let everybody know the difference between, you know, just guessing like some of these other people do in their mock drafts and you actually picking the best person and the best fit. And if you don't understand that by now, then go listen to the fucking Bleacher Report or some dumb shit like that. And thank you, as always, for your time, sir.
Oh, please. I appreciate the praise. And, you know, thanks for having me on this. Love the work y'all put into everything. What makes it so much of a pleasure to do.
Absolutely. And Frenchie, you and I will be coming back to go over your mock, your full round one mock. And Tom, we'll be talking to you coming up here shortly in the next few days.
No doubt about it. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Damn right, fellas.